ourselves to it. Against its own people.
Estados Unidos ha hecho muy buen trabajo de
esconder
la información de lo que está pasando.
Israel.
Free, free Palestine.
Estando en Gaza ahorita y lo.
Long live Palestine.
Long live.
Ha estado pasando por muchos años. La gente.
Los ataques de Israel.
No sabe. El papel.
Contra Gaza recibieron una fuerte desaprobación en varias ciudades alrededor del mundo.
Que los Estados Unidos juegan el
mundo, donde miles de personas salieron a las calles a condenar las acciones de Tel Aviv.
De Oriente, especialmente teniendo a
contra Palestina. El domingo.
Israel, un estado.
Con más de 1,000 personas se congregaron.
Que mantiene control, mantiene poder.
En Los Ángeles para demostrar su repudio contra los ataques en Gaza.
Imperialista en el
En Azucet Valladares,
de Oriente.
Es una activista angelina.
Indignación.
Estados Unidos, a través de Israel.
Estoy enojada.
Tiene mucho poder en los.
Y en estas temporadas que dice.
Recursos del Medio Oriente.
Que navideñas.
Pues tiene mucho que ver con
que hay que pensar en el prójimo.
La agenda total que.
Y en la paz.
Tiene los Estados Unidos
muy increíble que
teniendo a su población
con eso sucediendo lo que está sucediendo y pero
quiero mucho miedo con el pretexto de
empezar a decir que esto hasta
combatir el terrorismo
está sucediendo lo que ha estado sucediendo en Palestina
con esa misma mentalidad la gente
han sido más de 60 años obviamente pero
quiere apoyar a Israel porque
ahorita está peor porque
dicen que los palestinos, dicen que los musulmanes
meses no han permitido que entrara ni medicina ni alimentos.
La gente dicen que esta gente,
gente se está muriendo literalmente, tuvieron que cerrar panaderías.
Son terroristas y nosotros sabemos
porque no había producción de pan.
Que los terroristas son los que tienen
pan, o sea, de las peores condiciones. Y encima como le digo en estas
todo el militar, todo el poder militar, los que están
fechas ahorita bombardeando,
matando los que acaban de matar ayer,
criaron a la gente, que un grupo de niños caminando de la escuela,
más de 200 personas, muchos niños,
les cayó una bomba encima, o sea, si a...
y niñas, esos son los.
Ahorita la gente no se conmueve y no hace algo, yo no sé, yo
los verdaderos terroristas, así es que
no sé qué les va a tocar el alma, entonces yo por eso
está basado en mentiras.
And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Welcome, bienvenidos. Mi español es demasiado pequeño para hablar mucho en español. I don't speak enough Spanish to speak well. And that show looks like it was kind of running on. So I apologize. Mia culpa a nuestros compadres que hablan español. I apologize to Spanish-speaking and listening folks. But I'm going to move into my show, which is in English almost entirely. With the occasional epithet or pathetic attempt. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, two-hour show, and we're going to have a little musical introduction, and I'll be right back.
Hybrid God and man travels the promised land, preaching love, teaching equality. Deity aside, he said, we're all the same inside. It's only fear that blocks the path to being free. told the power brokers, you must step down from on high. It's your greed that sees the suffering here below. You don't want freedom, you just want the easy way to go. And you know you'll have to kill me down the road. And you know they killed him down the road. Seems we didn't learn a thing. So a common man born king led the People's March of American Equality. Skin color aside, he said we're all the same inside, and all God's children must be free. And he told the power brokers, you must step down from on high. It's your greed that seeds the suffering here below. You don't want freedom, you just want the easy way to go. And you know you'll have to kill me down the road. And you know they killed him down the road. Well, I'm neither God nor great man, but I do know where I stand in this continual war of wealth and poverty. Rich or poor aside, I see we're all the same inside, in need of basic human rights with dignity. So I tell you, power brokers, you must step down from on high. It's your greed that sees this suffering here below. You don't want freedom, you just want the easy way to go. And you know you'll have to kill me down the road. Keeps on rising on too many still a-crying. A world slowly dying from corporate greed. I know our only hope for peace is when we sit down for the feast at a table shared by all in a society. So I tell you, power brokers, you must step down from on high. It's your greed that seeds the suffering here below. You don't want freedom, you just want the easy way to go. And you know you'll have to kill me down the road. If you don't want freedom, you just want the easy way to go. Then I guess you'll have to kill me down the road.
And that was Jim Hendy, or Hindi, or Hind, or Hind. Who knows how to pronounce his name? It's H-I-N-D-E. I think I'll call him Hindi until he corrects me. Shout Down the Wind, Songs of Peace, Protest, and Patriotism, and it's called Kill Me Down the Road. You're tuned to Free Radio, as I mentioned before, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and you're tuned to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Yeah, it's a bathrobe and Robespierre kind of rammed together as one word based on the kind of fanciful, somewhat amusing picture of Robespierre, the French revolutionary figure wandering around in a bathrobe protesting the rights or the lack of rights of poor people outside who have no legal place to sleep and who face $97 tickets. And now they face $1,000 and a year in jail if they get three of those tickets in Santa Cruz because of the new law passed by the Matthews-Robinson-Coonerty Combine at City Council, actually unanimously passed. Let's give the City Council its due, or its doo-doo in this case. A series of anti-homeless measures that came to City Council on Tuesday night involving some harshening of the downtown ordinances, which I'm going to be talking about. And I'm going to be playing more on Sunday when I have a longer period of time to play. I'm also expecting a call, although it isn't coming in, so maybe I shouldn't be expecting it. I'm often expecting things that don't arrive. From the studios of Community TV, where there is a meeting in progress discussing issues such as, number of issues, I guess. But one of the issues is going to be the Community TV's practice of filming and videoing, I should say, and broadcasting the Santa Cruz City Council meetings and other meetings of, usually it's just City Council meetings, but I guess they also do Board of Supervisors meetings, and they also do, I don't know that they do, somebody does Board of Supervisors meetings. It gets broadcast on Community TV. I'm assuming it's them that actually does the original videoing and filming. But I know they do the filming on the videoing and on the actual Tuesday, every other Tuesday City Council meetings. And there's been some concern among some folks that the City Council kind of dictates how they're going to film the City Council meetings, avoiding the City Council embarrassment. If the City Council, for example, is interrupted by a speaker or decides they want to interrupt their own process to eliminate someone, they direct the City Council cameras to stop filming, even though, you know, it's news, it's going on, it's a part of the City Council meeting. The City Council chooses to censor that, and that can be, that's a problem, and it's a problem for those who want to get a full sense of what's happening at City Council. If the City Council is moving to actually physically remove or order someone from its chambers, that event should be captured on video, both for evidentiary purposes and also so that the community can know what's going on. We know our City Council would never be repressive and remove people for the wrong reasons or do so in an inappropriate way. Just kidding, folks. Of course they would, and of course they have. But the fact of the matter is, it should go out publicly for people to make their own judgments on and not be subject to the censorship of Mayor Matthews or whoever's chairing the City Council meeting at the time. That, I think, is the issue that's coming up at Community TV tonight. I think it's open to the public. If anybody wants to go down there to the Community TV, I think it's a board of directors meeting, perhaps, they can do that. I think it started at 6, and we may be getting a report or even a live broadcast from there. I'd heard that was a possibility, and maybe it will actually be a reality soon. I'm going to talk a little bit about the downtown ordinance changes that were passed unanimously at City Council on Tuesday night, just to give people an update. They don't go into effect until they're passed again in 2 weeks, and then there has to be a 4-week period, a month period, after that second reading, as it's called at City Council, that the ordinances actually go into effect. And my general impression and my general attitude towards the proposed ordinances is there kind of a wrong-headed rallying cry for merchants and residents who, in some cases, have some very legitimate concerns and complaints, but instead of using a somewhat more straightforward procedure of actually trying to address abusive behavior or conduct problems downtown, they are trying to criminalize a large number of people and give the police much greater power to set up and expand, actually, forbidden zones where people are not allowed to engage in innocent behavior, not abusive behavior, but innocent behavior. And by that, I'm talking about legally protected innocent behavior, which is allowed in other places, which was not going to be allowed in along most of Pacific Avenue and all of the rest of every single business district in the city, which is such things as street performing, political tabling, sitting on the sidewalk where since most places there are no benches. And then peaceful spare changing, the great bugaboo, and the hue and cry has been raised about panhandlers, the gauntlet, and so forth. And again, we heard a lot on Tuesday night, and it was quite a long council session, kind of an interesting one, actually. It started at around 7 with oral communications and ended around 11 with the kind of prefabricated result pushed through the city council. 7 people voting yes, 0 voting no for this package of both ordinances and largely symbolic gestures that don't have a lot of significance, except they kind of, as I said, serve as a sort of a rah-rah, let's go get them bums downtown. We ain't going to take any more. We're mad as hell. Now, usually this is kind of my feeling about a number of issues. I can appreciate the sentiment behind the idea that citizens are taking action to change circumstances and problems, to get politicians to respond to real issues that they feel have been ignored. And I have to commend citizens for coming to the city council meeting, pro and con, to speak about the issue. The problem was they weren't really speaking about the issue. They were lining up behind prefabricated solutions cooked up in private by the Matthews Coonerty Robinson Downtown Working Group and promulgated secretly and privately without any information to the rest of the community by the Chamber of Commerce, by the Downtown Association, perhaps by the Downtown Management Corporation, by the Santa Cruz Neighbors, by groups that have a particular agenda and a particular series of, I think, completely useless solutions that really involve criminalizing large groups of people, even though they insist, no, we're not attacking homeless people, we're attacking bad behavior downtown. That's the claim. I heard Lynn Robinson going on about this on KSCO after someone alerted me to it, and I called Rosemary Chalmers, who's the morning person there, and she agreed to put me on. I went on the next day. It was yesterday, and she said she was going to give me 12 minutes. That was the fastest 12 minutes I've ever been on. Maybe it was 12 minutes, possibly. And I think I actually got it right when I talked on the air on KSCO about it, and hopefully I'll get it right tonight in clarifying what the real issues are. Nobody has just to put up with a lot of shit from anybody, whether it's downtown, in a store, at the city council meeting, on the beach, or in your own home, for that matter. If you're getting abusive behavior from someone, you should have a recourse, and hopefully there's a peaceful recourse. Hopefully, that there are other people who can intervene. And that's often what happens downtown when there are disputes between homeless people. Other homeless people intervene and say, hey, come on, cool it, it's relax, cool out, and so forth. But if there isn't, there are, supposedly police officers and laws that are supposed to address particular forms of abusive behavior, like spitting at someone, like assault, like theft, and so forth. I'm going to continue with this subject, but I do have a caller, and callers take precedence. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert. I just want to know if I can
get this
show when they start talking. Put it on the air.
Well, we are on the air right now, I got to tell you. So,
I'm going to call back in a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. We'll put you on then. Just don't put us on.
Yeah, we'll put you on.
Okay. Thank you. And that's Coral, who's a street performer with Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, a group that's been playing illegally on the streets for 5 years, by the way, ignoring the downtown ordinances and taking back the space for street performers in front of New Leaf Market. I think they were doing it every Wednesday night, then they did it every Tuesday, and it expanded to Monday night. I'm not aware that there was any significant number of complaints about it. Maybe there were complaints. Who knows? Cynthia Matthews held up a file at the city council meeting from her place on the podium as the mayor and the chair of the meeting, saying that I've received, the last several years I've received this thick folder of complaints. And I'm not going to dispute that she may have indeed received a number of complaints, but none of these complaints that I know of, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm still waiting to hear back, I wrote her a letter, have been made public to all of us. again, it's this behind-the-scene, closed process, mommy knows best procedure that Coonerty was using, and Rotkin before Coonerty, and, you know, other people before that. It's tempting for politicians to think they have the solutions to work it out, mobilize people, and then press forward. Now we're going to go back to the community TV, I think. That's the community TV phone line coming in here. Hi there, you're on free radio.
Okay, here we go.
All right, then.
Your organization, it talks about promoting free speech, fostering diverse points of view, recognizing community diversity, helping people find their own voice, emphasizing community, encourage communications, create opportunities, expand educational access, promote participatory democracy. In a nutshell, I'm feeling like the part where you televise the Santa Cruz City Council meetings, it appears that it's a very stifling kind of telecast. For instance, the City Council has complete control. They can turn off the cameras, you know, at any time they want. Another thing, like you have specifically agreed that at certain intervals you can't show certain people. You can only show certain people speaking that's been recognized by them, whereas other people there might also have significance, and they are being tuned out. My personal experiences with the session, I will give a communication, and then other council people will speak afterwards, and they'll mention something, you know, about what I've said, and I have no chance to debate what they're saying. Many times they take what I'm saying and they put it completely out of context, and I have no way of defending what I've just said, and I've seen it happen to other people. I would like to see you guys in the ultimate end have objective reporting there, you know, where people are interviewed and where you guys decide when the camera should go off and on, not the City Council. The City Council shouldn't be in charge of their own reporting. There's a real problem with that, and I would really love for you guys to take that question up. Thank you.
Can you hear it?
Sure can. That's Bernard Klitzner at the Community TV Board of Directors, is it not? Hello? Hello? I could hear it, but then I think it sounds like it went away. Unfortunate. But we did get Bernard Klitzner loud and clear. He's with the Human Rights Organization. And he did bring this issue up at that meeting. We have a weekly Human Rights Organization meeting every Saturday at the Taqueria Vallarta. There'll be one in 2 days to discuss a proposal to engage in protests to boycott bigoted businesses. It's kind of hard to say sometimes. Downtown, or to engage in some of the kinds of protests to alert the community and express outrage at the passage of the downtown ordinances. Let me talk a little bit more, though, about my... Well, I'll talk as soon as I... Since I'm allowed to by my by the public here. Hi there, you're on free radio again.
Robert, here's more.
Okay.
The camera, turn the camera off. Let's turn it in another direction. or do something that they ask them to do spontaneously, as if it wasn't planned, and at their discretion, they can control what happens right then. And I would like to know what the ruling is on this, or if there's any provisions made ahead of time for what camera people are supposed to be doing, and what's the basis for this. Thank you.
That's Carl Brune speaking.
That's it.
Thank you, Rick. Anything else?
That's it. No. Gotta go.
Is there any response that people are going to make? Or? Guess not. Thought perhaps we'd hear some debate on the board of directors. Maybe it's just an oral communications period where you get to speak and they just sort of look at you blankly, and if they decide they want to, they come back next week or 2 weeks or next month or next year. Well, you know, I'm glad that there is an oral communications process. I use it frequently myself. I don't really have much confidence that it actually is an effective way of getting members of a board of directors or a city council to really address issues unless you bring, you know, a lot of people with you, as the Downtown Association, the Chamber of Commerce, the Santa Cruz Neighbors, and the other allied groups did bring to city council on Tuesday night. They packed the chambers. I've never seen, well, rarely seen so many people at city council. Now, I freely admit that. And I freely admit the majority of people who showed up there were vigorous supporters of the 8 or 9 proposals of the city council. And I'm going to kind of run through those proposals for you so you'll get a sense of what was passed, pretty much what was proposed was passed, and also what it actually was, at least from my perspective, in terms of changing the existing situation insofar as it changed at all. Let's see here. One moment. Here we go. I'm looking at the summary of the proposals. There was a. It was described in the staff report as a series of recommendations to revise existing ordinances for greater consistency and enforceability, make existing definitions and distances consistent for activities such as aggressive panhandling. And then it said in parentheses, distances are not increased. Now, in the most technical sense, it's certainly true. What we have currently in Pacific Avenue and throughout the city in business districts is a whole series of forbidden zones that make about 90%, 95% of the city off limits to peaceful, spare changing, and sitting on the sidewalk. It's illegal to do that. If you try to do it on any sidewalk outside Pacific Avenue near a business, it's illegal. And the reason for that is that there is a forbidden zone of 14 feet from a building. And since most sidewalks are 10 feet wide, the only thing you can do is walk into the middle of the street and panhandle. That could be an interesting protest, I suppose, although you'd be arrested for blocking traffic. So it's true that the 14-foot distance for forbidden zones, which shouldn't exist at all, in my view, because panhandling, peaceful panhandling, is not an abusive activity. It can be annoying. It can be depressing. It can be irritating, but unless it is done abusively, it is not per se illegal behavior, and it's not abusive behavior. So the idea that all these people are raging about panhandling as abusive behavior in and of itself is a fundamental falsehood, and it's also a fundamental attack on the free speech rights of poor people who often need to panhandle, okay? I know that's a hard one to swallow. I know all those professional panhandlers, they're swindlers, they're not homeless, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes that's true. But the fact of the matter is, it's not an easy job to panhandle on Pacific Avenue or anywhere else. You don't make much money. It doesn't come in very fast, generally speaking. You get a lot of abuse. It's not something you would normally do if you had a lot of other options. That's just my impression. And I speak out of 20 years of interviewing experience of people on the streets, and you can actually listen to people on the air talking about panhandling. Now, I don't hear a lot of complaints from panhandlers because they're kind of resigned to it, and they don't know quite what else to do. And some people, you know, it's a way of communicating with the community. They're passing through. They're travelers. They're not going to be staying long, need money to get to Eugene, et cetera, et cetera. But for other people, you know, it's a reflection of the times. And I don't just mean the times and the Great Depression of 2008, but I mean in 2009, but the times for the last 20 or 30 years in this country, where rents have been skyrocketing and, you know, they haven't kept pace with wages, have not kept pace with them and so forth. So the distances, the forbidden zones, forbid innocent behavior. That's the first thing that has to be understood. Sitting, spare changing, tabling, and street performing are innocent behavior. In fact, I think they're positive behavior in many ways. There's certainly behavior that's constitutionally protected. And indeed, it's my view that if a number of these ordinances actually made it into the higher courts, there would probably be court rulings striking them down. But it's not a popular thing to do. We have an ACLU that isn't even going after the sleeping ban that has been overturned in Los Angeles and San Diego, and it probably could be functionally overturned here too. partially for political reasons. People like Mike Rodkin, who's a supporter of these downtown ordinances, both this round and all previous rounds, is on the board of directors of the ACLU. He's a powerful voice. So is, I think, Sheila Coonerty, sister to Ryan Coonerty. I'm sorry, to Neil Coonerty, the supervisor, and aunt to Ryan Coonerty, the former mayor, and the, one of the masterminds, or mini minds, behind this ordinance. And I do speak sarcastically because I think it's it takes both a small heart and a small mind to propose these kinds of laws and whip up public sentiment around them the way it has been done. It takes, you know, it leaves me sputtering a little bit the way it's done. It's sort of like Coonerty's assault on public assembly in parking lots, where he's made it illegal to read a book in a parking lot in order to protect everybody. It's just wrong-headed, and it's removes vast amounts of public space from customary, traditional, and innocent use. And that's what's going on here with these ordinances. So the first claim that they're revising existing ordinances for greater consistency and enforceability, existing distances and definitions consistent, they aren't really, what they're really doing is they're expanding the forbidden zones in some cases from, for instance, they're adding things that are, where it's currently legal to be near things like a bench, to be near things like a street sculpture. And setting up wide 14-foot, or in the case of street performers and political tablers, 10-foot forbidden zones around those things. I mean, so for instance, I'm actually looking at the current ordinances. I always carry a copy of the ordinances in my pocket. And they're pretty standard as it sits. All the panhandling ordinances are 14 feet from various things, but now, of course, they include more things that they're 14 feet from, and the sitting ordinances likewise contain more things that it's illegal to be around, and I'll be going into the details. But without really going into all the specifics, and they had big maps up there that showed, oh, see, that you can still, there's still seven or eight places along a block where you can street perform, not realizing or not acknowledging that street performers are now going to be competing with people sitting on the sidewalk, competing with panhandlers, and competing with political tablers for these spaces. And street performers worth their salt don't want to do that. They don't want to compete with other people. And indeed, it increases, so it's going to drive probably the best street performers away, or make it more difficult for them, or make them require them to go get a permit, which is something that a lot of street performers don't want to do. And traditionally in Santa Cruz, you've had a situation where that's not been the way Santa Cruz operates. And it was eliminated it was changed initially in 1994, not because there were complaints about street performers, but because you had the same mob of downtown association misguided, you know, I want to say bigots, and I think that's true, but I think it doesn't really cover it, because people who have been genuinely abused or are frightened or had problems downtown are looking for solutions, and they suddenly turn to this idea of forbidden zones because that means they can safely walk around and there's nobody there, so they're safer, you know, in those zones from even the prospect of being asked for spare change or seeing a sign that says need money or having a street performer perform at them. All these things, you know, makes them safe. The most ridiculous thing was they're going to set up a 14-foot it's actually a 10-foot area all around these new street sculptures and artwork that was put in. Not going to have much impact around New Leaf, where there's currently a 10-foot zone anyway around the kiosks and the area where people eat. But in some of the other areas where these sculptures were put in, it makes one wonder, it makes one suspicious that the sculptures were specifically put in with these new ordinances in mind. That they would serve as the pretext for establishing much greater forbidden areas where people were not allowed to sit, spare change, play music, or politically table. And the claim that you can politically table in a number of six or seven or eight places on a block doesn't mean a lot if there are other people who are also in those spaces who are trying to do things like sit down and relax because there aren't enough benches to sit on, and they've now put an hour time limit on benches you can sit on, which will probably pass in 2 weeks and go into effect in a month after that. again, the whole point of this is to, it seems to be the, it was called the unintended consequence by council members Lane and Byers, but it's actually pretty, if you're past it, you intend it, whether you want to admit it or not, because you're passing it. And Rotkin as much has admitted this at the council, Councilmember Rotkin, that it's abuse, it's to get rid of all behavior in order to get rid of abusive behavior. And he says poor people are going to suffer because of this, because they have to be outside. But, you know, that's the price we pay. I'm not sure for what. That's the kind of language that Madeleine Albright used in terms of the starvation of children in Iraq in the 90s and the Clinton regime with the embargo. He said that she said that, well, you know, it's true, 500,000 children have died, but that's really the price we have to pay to rein in Iraq. Well, I think it's even worse here. I don't think you're going to rein in anything. You're just going to make tensions higher downtown, or you're going to drive people away. So I suppose if you drive people away, so think the people who are passing these ordinances and the many people who came to support them on Tuesday night, you're going to encourage more people to come back into the downtown as a shopping area. They'll be able to buy jewelry, you know, they'll be able to buy fancy dresses. They'll come to the restaurants, they'll come to the movie theaters, they'll come to buy spectacles and frozen yogurt and things of that sort, and the stuff that, you know, one of the points that was made by people at this, several of the speakers who opposed the ordinance, is, well, there's just not really a lot of stuff sold downtown that most people want, and that's one of the reasons why businesses find it hard on Pacific Avenue. 20 or 30 years ago, there were some, you know, core stores. There was Gottschalk's, there was Ford's, there were department stores, and there was Sprouse Ritz, you know, 5 and 10. None of these, there are no such anchor stores anymore down there. There's Trader Joe's, and it was pointed out that Trader Joe's hasn't lost any business at all. And as far as I know, or as far as that speaker knows, hasn't been complaining about, requesting downtown ordinances, though I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they have been, I'm not sure. But they're not having business problems the way other stores are, and because they sell things people want. So that's been a concern, too, that businesses are, in fact, you know, in the wrong kind of business, and they're blaming poor people around them. And residents who are concerned about abusive behavior are suggesting the solution to abusive behavior is to eliminate all behavior, abusive, innocent, or otherwise, within these corridors so they can walk quickly through or leisurely through to their whatever they're going to do and not have to deal with human beings at all. And that, I think, is kind of both an insult to the people who are looking for real solutions and who have had real problems downtown, as well as to the people, the many people that they're criminalizing who are completely innocent in this situation. The vast majority of the people who use these public spaces are innocent. But the theory is going, well, we got to get rid of the bad apples, so we'll make everything illegal in this zone in terms of sitting, spare changing, political tabling, and street performing. I don't go for that. And I don't think it works. That was the first thing they were trying to do. And they're disguising it by saying this is for greater consistency. No, they're expanding the forbidden areas. And they're expanding them significantly and reducing public space downtown. I'm going to try to be more specific about the exact amount of space taken. That's one thing you didn't see. You didn't see the actual reduction in space. The other thing you didn't see at the council meeting or hear about at the council meeting were specific police stats that showed this great crime wave. You heard a lot from Cynthia Matthews, and you heard some horror stories about businesses leaving and so forth. Not just horror stories, real stories about real businesses leaving because they felt they didn't want the Pacific scene downtown or businesses not coming to town. But you didn't get any police stats about specific criminal behaviors in terms of that might provoke and sensitize us to or make us feel it's necessary to have any changes, specifically to deal with those kinds of behaviors. It was just this sort of general perception, this sort of vague sense that we have to clean up the downtown. And, you know, the downtown has gotten somewhat darker at different times. You have to kind of, you have to flow with it in a certain sense. You know, you have to recognize that the groups that are down there, deal with them, people are abusive, you can, you know, you can complain about it. You can file criminal complaints. And the police are quick to respond to criminal complaints. And they become even quicker with the funding and the directives given by the secretive Coonerty Robinson Matthews Downtown Working Group. So that's, and for other people I know, having massive police reaction to somebody sitting on the sidewalk and getting upset with a police officer because they're being told to move but they're not doing anything wrong, and then they call a bunch of squad cars to back up the police authority, that happened to Black Rose, who was singing on the sidewalk. We've talked about her case. It's happened to other people as well. It happens with some frequency. Most people just surrender their rights. They surrender their dignity. They say, oh, sure, I'll do whatever you say, sir. Yes, sir, yes, sir, three bags full. Even though they aren't doing anything wrong, because the city has deemed it's appropriate to have all these forbidden zones. And the police, you know, are saying, we're just doing our job, all that sort of thing. Although in many cases that's not the case. They are selectively targeting people. And that's been, at least to me, persuasively alleged by people who've talked on this radio program, given very specifics about Officer Winston and how he has pursued people, about Sergeant Christian Lamas, who not only broke Donna Dice's arm way out on May 9th back on the out on the Lighthouse Field area, but has gone after other people downtown, colleagues of hers, the fraudulent use of drunken public charges, which police aren't really responsible for. Drunken public is an unusual charge. If you get a drunken public charge, the police officer can dismiss the charge, and the jail can dismiss the charge after 6 or 7 hours. They can leave you out. Your property is still being held by the police. You wake up at 3 and 4 in the morning. You're not even in a bed. You're lying on a cold steel mat in a holding cell with a bunch of other people, and you're released in the coldest hours of the morning without a charge. And people who are poor can't really deal with that. If it was a false arrest, how are they going to prove it? You know. But we didn't even get any stats about the numbers of arrests, about the numbers of crimes, similar to the procedures used in the parking lots. When Sheila Coonerty, who I've often been at odds with, as I said, I mentioned her name before, has been kind of part of the Coonerty clan, the power group in the city, one of the powerful families, politically conservative families in many ways. Sheila Coonerty, I were on the issue of the parking lots, and the Downtown Commission was on the other side of this. She opposed making all parking lots no-go zones, unless you're parking your vehicle and then you have to scurry away, or you're guilty of illegal behavior. Actually, you don't even get 15 minutes. You get zero amount of time, except where you're parking or retrieving your vehicle. It's sitting in your car reading a book. Even within that 15-minute period of time, that's not parking or retrieving your vehicle. So, technically, everybody's illegal who isn't parking or retrieving their vehicle and then zipping off to the shops to shop, or just leaving the parking lots, at least. Anyway, Sheila Coonerty, has not, she tried to get information from the police department this summer. I've talked about this on the air at the Downtown Commission, which is where these ordinances should have gone as well, and they customarily have gone, but the process was short-circuited by the mayor and her little subcommittee, her secretive subcommittee. She tried to get information from the police about what the crime wave was. And, of course, Zach Friend, the police department PR man, our local Goebbels, as I like to call him, nice guy, actually. You know, I chatted with him at city council. But, you know, what he does is more important than, how he and I relate in a friendly way, frankly. And what he does is he covers for the police department. He didn't give the figures. He said, go to the city council and make them tell us to give them. And, of course, since he has powerful friends on the city council, since the police department essentially, I don't want to say runs the city council, but it's kind of reaching that point, has for a long time. It's a very powerful interest group, just like at the state level and the city level. The police department is very strong in terms of its impact on city politics. And the police department wouldn't give the stats that showed any of this. We didn't get any stats last night around the downtown ordinances. I don't mean last night, Tuesday night. So, you didn't know if there was any changes. You couldn't see what crimes were being increased, what crimes were decreased. And this is important because when one of the other measures that was passed and was lauded by the council members, and some people I've talked to liked it, was that if you get 3 infractions, instead of the infractions going for collection, which is what they're now doing, the state decided it was pointless to run after people with warrants on these infractions for minor infractions, do they just ruin your credit? Or again, I think there are may have something to do with your driver's license, but it certainly ruins your credit that you get huge fines and so forth. And so the concern of the council members was you can't hold people accountable because they just tear up their infraction tickets and, you know, thumb their noses at you. Well, that's not true, really, because at least that the police have the option to make that act otherwise under existing law. If you engage in two instances of panhandling within 6 months or two instances of violating various other infractions, that's a misdemeanor. And that means you can be arrested and you can be charged and subject to up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine under existing law. Not a council member on the council said a damn thing about that. And I've got to say, we did talk to Councilmember Don Lane at some length, and we'll be talking to him again on Monday at 3 o'clock at the West Side Coffee Roasting Company. If anybody wants to come to that meeting, they're welcome to do that. We're going to be meeting with Catherine Byers at 1 o'clock on Monday. We're not going to change their votes. This is a done deal. But we're trying to educate members of the city council about what they're really doing. And Lane was the only one who even just raised any questions, although he was oh so careful not to suggest that there was any bigotry or wrongdoing or bad feeling or even bad judgment. No, you know, certainly not. I mean, everything was roses and flowers with Don and the city council. But two infractions is a misdemeanor. In any particular crime. What this does, however, this new law that's being passed says that three infractions of any kind become a misdemeanor, not for repeated behavior, not for the repeated same kind of. You had to do two things of the same kind. You had to sit next to a building twice, not the same building, but the same crime of sitting within 14 feet of a building. Actually, it was it's one of a collection of crimes. You could sit within 14 feet of a building. You could sit within 14 feet of a drinking fountain. You could sit within 50 feet of a cash dispersal machine. You could sit within 14 feet of an open-air dining area. These are all under the same section. So if you were cited twice for this, that's a misdemeanor. And it's at the option of the city attorney to drop it back to an infraction if he doesn't want to give you a jury trial and if he doesn't want to have a public defender provided. But the fact is, they have that option if they really wanted to use it. So, in a way, this whole thing is completely phony. It's completely bogus. At least that's my understanding of this. When I wanted to talk to John Barisoni about it, he didn't want to talk to me. He just sent me an email. City Council says, I don't have to tell you about this stuff. So, they're my client. You're not. And I got nowhere with that. So, I'm going to, you know, I will continue to try to talk. I'm going to be meeting with Mike Rotkin tomorrow at 10. That's at the West Side Roasting Company, for those who want to come on down. That's next to the Safeway. Mike Rotkin is the swing vote, or I thought was the swing vote, when I had hoped that Madrigal, Lane, and Byers might show some backbone and actually oppose some aspects of this in a strong, significant, and clear way. And, of course, none of them did. So, you know, that's water under the bridge or whatever. But Rotkin is see if his understanding and mine are the same. Rotkin is an interesting fellow. He's one of the few council members who comes into the studio to actually debate these issues. He has a lot of competence in his ability to quickly address issues, and he's even glibber than I am. I mean, he's even more facile, more skilled in debate, quicker with his tongue and so forth. I freely acknowledge that. There's no question about it. I don't really want to compete with him or try to compete with him in that regard. But I do notice also that he is, to say he's a liar is not, it has a harsh sound. I don't mind being harsh, but I want to be accurate. He passes on misinformation, acting as though he knows what he's talking about and as though he is an authority on these issues. In fact, I'll give you some examples, or at least the most recent example. He's not at all, doesn't know what he's talking about, and often passes on directly information that's directly contrary to the truth, and sometimes in a very significant circumstances. So, for instance, I'm facing a ticket at the Metro Bus Transit Authority because I was talking to homeless people, interviewing them for my program, and a security guard told us to move. No one was trying to get past us. There was a lot of room. We were four blocks from the public sidewalk in the entranceway sidewalk area into the Metro off of Pacific Avenue. I had earlier complained to the security guards that they were blasting KSCO religious sermons over the loudspeaker system, which they were. I tape recorded, I documented, I played it on free radio. They refused to respond to it. Then when I talked to a supervisor later, he did, to his credit, stopped that and said, that's not appropriate. And he was right. No big deal, let it go. And I was then talking to people. But the same security guard came back and saw me there, and I pointed out to other people who were there that they had a right to be there, even if the security guard didn't like them there, because he was running around kind of shooing people away. And he came up to me, and he wanted me to move off the property. And I said, no, I'm not going to move off the property. And he called the police. The police wrote me a ticket for interfering with a business, which is both the wrong code section. There's actually a code section that the Metro has to use. It has to do with violations of the law around the Metro. It's not really a private business. It's a business that's used by the public, supported by public funds. There's a whole procedure you have to use if you want someone to leave there. Kind of hearings you need to give them, and you have to show there's some sort of imminent problem. None of that was done in my case. And the police very facilely and abusively falsely arrested me, in the sense I wasn't taken into custody, but I was told I had to leave. I was detained, and I did leave because it was a Sunday. I had other things I wanted to do rather than go to jail at that point. Came back in 2 weeks with a whole bunch of people and video cameras, confronted the same security guard, did exactly what I was doing, and of course I was completely ignored because they knew I announced I was coming. They didn't want to, you know, have this documented that they were engaging in this kind of repressive behavior in public space. Now, the point I have to make is about Mike Rodkin. I called Rodkin up, and I asked him what the story was with, you know, he's on the board of the Metro Transit Authority. You know, what's the deal with, well, I was going to give out some flyers. He says, oh, no, it's illegal to give out flyers to the Metro Transit area unless you get some sort of permit or something. And I said, no, it's not. We discussed this 10 years ago. The Metro went after some guy. I think it was a guy called Mr. Fidget or Mr. Gidget. I'm not sure. He was flyering on the Metro. And then it also became an issue about 5 years ago or 6 years ago with Paul Marcellin Sampson, who was a critic of some of the Metro's policies and was flyering Metropolitan Writers on the basis of he had a Metropolitan Writers Union he was trying to organize. And they tried to harass him about this. And it's not illegal to give out flyers in public places. It's just not. It's First Amendment protected activity. Rodkin told me just straight out, it's illegal. I know it's illegal. I remember that. And of course, I learned later, he emailed me later, well, it isn't illegal. It's not, I was wrong, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to give out misinformation, it isn't illegal, it's just, no, I guess it's not illegal. He told me this after we did our protest. I received that email. I mean, we were going to give out literature anyway, even if, you know, Fuhrer Rodkin says it's illegal. And I say that, you know, with some disrespect, because individuals who are in public office, who pretend to know what they're talking about, assume positions of authority over such really significant matters as First Amendment activity, and who pose as some sort of ACLU gurus, because he's on the board of the ACLU. This is the same guy who tried to have me arrested for walking into the ACLU general meeting in August 2007 with a sign about the sleeping ban. He wanted me to leave my sign behind. I said, no. I'm trying to educate ACLU members about this issue. It's an issue the local ACLU is ignoring. And it's all chronicled, if you're interested in looking at some of this, both the Metro issue and the ACLU issue, on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Anyway, I'm winding around to the fact that the measure passed at City Hall on Tuesday night that said three infractions is a misdemeanor is completely unnecessary unless you want to give the police the power to run people out of town and really up the stakes for poor people. Because the kind of infractions that we're talking about are really the issue. We're not talking about assaulting people. And we're not talking about screaming at people and disturbing the peace. We might be, I don't know. But we don't know what we're talking about. My impression is we're not talking about that. The great majority of tickets given downtown that I can see are for non-abusive behavior, but it has to do with being in the wrong zone, the wrong place, playing music that a merchant or a resident wants to close down, even though during the day the laws do not really allow for that because there's a very high bar for unreasonable noise. It means that you can do a lot of playing relatively loudly because of the way the law is written. I've just discussed this on the air, without being hassled by, without being at least legally hassled by the police, even if people don't like what you're playing. there's, you know, Santa Cruz, I'm proud to say, has abandoned the heckler's veto. You have to be able to tolerate some stuff you don't like. You don't like religious stuff, you have to be able to tolerate it, provided you're not having to pay for it coming out of loudspeakers at the Metro. That's a little different. I mean, you know, I'm all for the right for preachers on the streets, even people who preach, I think, absurd Christian delusional doctrines, but even bigoted, homophobic doctrines. However, not on my money, not out of public loudspeakers. And so that's not the issue. But the issue here is any three infractions, and that includes sleeping ban tickets, which were made specifically exempted from this in 1999 by the city council, which recognized that there was no legal place for people to sleep. They were supposed to be actually eliminating the sleeping ban, as Los Angeles, San Diego has done, Fresno has done, Palo Alto has done, Sacramento and Laguna Beach are in the process of doing. In other words, entered the 21st century. Instead, we got this minor change under who was then Mayor Byers in 1999 with a law that said, well, the sleeping is a crime. Sleeping as a violating the sleeping ban is no longer a misdemeanor if you do it twice. It's only an infraction. Well, now, if you sleep three times and ignore the tickets, as many homeless people have to do, you know, they can't afford to, you know, go to court frequently to deal with these issues. Then the reality is you face a misdemeanor charge. It is a gross, unfair, and vicious burden on poor people, and it is a reversal of a previous policy. And it's all being done in a misguided way to try to accomplish something that it won't accomplish, namely get better behavior downtown. I suppose we have to wait and see. Maybe there'll be there's one school of thought which says, well, if you want to gentrify the downtown area, you drive the poor people out, and then you'll get, you know, wealthier people who will come in and use the wealthier services, and the economy will start rising up again. You know, they'll be selling more watches, you know, and more knickknacks and more fancy dresses, and that's going to be great. You know, I'm not trying to take away from the right of store owners to sell these items. That's not the issue. I do believe the community has the right to use the public sidewalks for a variety of things, and poor people need those public spaces. They really do. I should say, having blathered on for about 55 minutes, that you can call in and talk about this issue. I invited several critics to call in. I posted on the Sentinel website, I believe I posted there, that I was doing a show tonight. People are welcome to call in and criticize, give their own views. 427-3772 is the call-in number. If you'd like to call in, 427-FRSC. It sounds like somebody's taking me up on it. Excellent. Hi there, you're on free radio. Hello.
Hello, hey Robert, how's it going?
Good, turn down your radio if you haven't already.
Oh, it's okay, I'm listening to what you said. I've been dealing with a major sinus infection. It's been really fucked. I wanted to come down to City Hall the other day, but I couldn't. However, I was really kind of pissed off when I got home the other day and I turned on the TV, and it's like, you know, whatever, the middle of the afternoon, late afternoon, and I'm looking at that and going, what the fuck? They're doing oral communication again, you know, it's time of the afternoon when they know a lot of people obviously can't get there. But I heard about you saying about meeting with Mike Rodkin, and, you know, well, first of all, you know, I got to say that it really makes me angry, and it really disturbs me with the attitude from the city, most of the city council and these police officers, the way, you know, like they blame the homeless for being homeless. Like, obviously, they can't see what's been happening, you know, economically and politically and stuff with the rest of our government. But you know, this whole thing with raising the fines, you know, if you get so many tickets or whatever and you don't pay them, you know, we're going to ruin your credit. I would like at least one of these city council members to explain the logic behind that and you know what I mean? Like, beat somebody down when they're already down? What does, you know, sending it down south to ruin somebody's credit, how is that, is that a positive solution? Is that going to regain positive results? No, I don't think so, but I would like them to explain what they...
Andrea, let me say, first of all, that they're going beyond that with the current law. They're going to make 3 infractions a misdemeanor. It's not going to ruin your credit. It's going to put you in jail. It'll put you in jail for up to a year and a $1,000 fine, depending on how the court rules. And people have actually been jailed for misdemeanor infractions before, panhandling mostly, sometimes public drunkenness with people who are really repeat offenders. They did a big spread in the Sentinel about this whole thing, saying, you know, oh, look, this guy got 60 tickets. He hasn't had to do a thing. That really is the choice of the police department that is making the citations, unless each of those infraction tickets was for a different crime. Because if you do an infraction of the same kind twice within 6 months, that's a misdemeanor. So they already have the power to jail you. And it's not just ruining your credit, which is what they were doing, which is bad enough, which you pointed out. Now they have the power to really... I suppose it's, you know, you're going to get free lodging. I mean, that there's that upside if you like the jail food or if you think it's a good use of public resources. Of course, it's absurdly expensive.
Sure.
And it's also a form of, you know, attacking people who are poor on the agenda of people who are not so poor, generally speaking, under the pretext of dealing with bad behavior.
Right.
But, I mean, you've been downtown. You've had bad experiences downtown, or have you?
A couple.
What do you do when you have a bad experience, and what kind of bad experiences have you had?
I haven't had too bad an experience, at least not for a while. I see some stuff go on. I don't know. It really kind of depends who's around and what's going on and the vibes and the energy that I feel. I go, you know, usually I go there and I, you know, my gut tells me a little bit ahead of time what's going on, what I'm feeling. And, you know, it's always the same thing. Like, actually, it's been more worse. My experiences have been worse with the police more than any kind of homeless people. Hell, since I've lived here, you know, Robert, it's really sad to say, and I told this officer the other night, I had to call down the police station. I said, and I was talking to this gentleman on this officer down there, I don't know who it was. I said, you know, sir, it's really, really sad for, you know, a resident to have to say that. I actually feel safer around a lot of homeless people. Those people would have my back more faster than any police. I said, you know what? The police scare me. I don't want them anywhere near me. Hell, they'll probably tase me. Hell, they'll probably shoot me if they got the chance. And that's how I honestly feel.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I don't think they certainly have that power. And there is, and Oscar Grant found that out to the sadness of his relatives up there in Oakland around the BART when he was shot on, you know, executed on January 1st. But, you know, it also has to be said that, you know, the Santa Cruz police haven't shot many people recently that I'm aware of, but they have engaged in behavior, at least it's been alleged by people, that they've been engaged in behavior like kicking someone in the face. Obviously, Donna Dice's arm was broken. And then instead of there being some accountability, some transparency in the police department, some, you know, correctional activity, you have the victims who are criminalized. Donna Dice is still facing court for her behavior. Why don't you finish up?
I have a question for you, Robert.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Robert.
Yeah.
Is it illegal to hand a blanket to a homeless person?
No, it's not.
While they're sleeping?
Well, it's illegal for a homeless person to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in any public place or in a vehicle or in any building that's not a house or hotel. And there are a few exceptions in terms of, like, church parking lots, 2 vehicles, 3 vehicles, business parking lots. It's illegal to wrap up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night if it constitutes laying out bedding in some way. But it's not illegal to hand a person a blanket. It's not illegal to carry a blanket.
I was told, because I noticed this person out here right by my apartment building that was sleeping one night, and it was freezing. And I had, you know, saw this person just kind of walked up, and they were wrapped up in a comforter. And I, you know, I felt kind of bad. So I came in, and I got a blanket, and I walked outside, and this police cruiser's, you know, cruising up the street really slow. And I just, like, you know, dodged, you know, out of sight, and, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, there's this flashlight shining on me. What are you doing? You know, I said, I live here. And well, who's back there, you know? And I said, and this girl, and I happened to be a woman. I didn't even know that. This, like, really nice-looking blonde lady, kind of young, you know, gets up, sits up, and I I said, officer, I just know this person sleeping here, and, you know, it's a really freezing cold night, you know, and as you can see, it's, you know, really late and it's cold, and she just looked like she could use that blanket. Oh, well, you can't be giving that blanket to this homeless person because it's illegal.
You know the name of the cop who said that?
You know, kind of shit.
What happened to me
one other time when this homeless guy was sitting out here. I went up over to Jack in the Box and bought him like a cheeseburger, fries, and soda, and came back and was handing to him. And some police pulled up and gave me some shit about that, too.
You don't remember the names of any of these police, do you?
No, he was tall, slender.
You know, in the future, if this happens to you, and I say this to all listeners, this is what I'm working on doing. I've spent a lot of time on these stupid downtown ordinance changes. It's, you know, it's a form of pandering to a merchant group that isn't really going to do anything other than make things harder for poor people outside, and I think for the community generally. But our response has to be to document, unfortunately, the police department's abusive behavior around this, because they are really the people, they're the agents that run out and do this kind of stuff. If you're accurate in telling me that a police officer told you not to buy a hamburger or give a hamburger to a homeless person or not to provide a blanket for a person on a freezing cold night, that's way out of line. I mean, it isn't even First Amendment activity. It's a form of trying to intimidate people, and it smacks of a kind of, people throw around the word genocide kind of freely in some respects, but it smacks certainly of a kind of an attempt to cut off people from survival necessities.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not good. It's not good. And you have so try to identify these people when you see them. Say, hold on, officer, I want to take your photo. Officer, can you get your sergeant over here? I'd like to talk to him. I think you're mistaken. Officer, what's your badge number and what's your name? I can't quite see it in the darkness.
I was so mad. I think I just looked at him and I still had a blanket under my arm, and I started to walk out because he was coming up to her, and I just barely looked over at him, and I walked out from, you know, behind the tree, and I just said, you know something, officer, this police department here you are some of the most inhumane people I have ever known. I just can't believe that.
And I think, yeah, I hear you, and I'm glad that you know, both you're telling us this story and that, you know, you felt strongly enough to try to provide these kinds of services. I think that's great. You do more than I do in that regard. I don't carry around blankets for people. I think it's great that you cared about that.
Right outside the building, and I got home that night in my car, and I kind of heard her snoring, and I looked over, and she was just, like, wrapped up in this comforter. So I thought, well, hell, you know, I got a couple extra blankets. I'm sure she could use an extra blanket because it was freezing that night. And they come up and say, you can't give that person a blanket. I mean, I don't know, Robert. I don't think these police officers even have a heart.
See, we need
a slab of concrete.
People can, Andrea, people can dismiss you as a loony or lying or exaggerating. What you need to do is you need to document this. You need to take pictures. You need to bring out witnesses. You need to have a video camera. You need to, you know, and immediately when this happens, I say this to everybody else, call into the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and discuss, you know, what's going on, you know, and leave a message and to say, I saw this happen at this time in this place, and we can at least start acquiring records. We're working on a new CopWatch website that should be able to start documenting this stuff more thoroughly. I appreciate your call.
Oh, one other thing, Robert.
Uh-huh.
That folder thing that Cynthia Matthews held up the other day with supposedly all those complaints, can she legally keep that withheld from the public? Because I would like to fucking read those complaints too.
Well, I don't think so. You know, but I'm not an attorney, and I'd like, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, I haven't done the legal research that would really give me all the confidence in the world, but I have put in a Public Records Act request. I'm actually going to read that right now on the air. I'll talk to you more about this when you call in again.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andrea. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We're talking about the dreadful, dourful downtown ordinance changes that were made by the city council after being cooked up in secret by Mayor Matthews' secret downtown task force, secretly passed on to various organizations who then mobilized all their people, denied the rest of the community until 4 days before the council meeting, and then rammed through the council meeting. And that will become law in about 6 weeks, if they're passed again in 2 weeks. And I was giving a description of what these were, and I'm going to quickly do that. I know I got lost to some extent into the talking about, I guess, one of the measures about so-called consistency in the forbidden zones. I just have to say it's so foolish to believe, and also restrictive to believe that cutting off, making innocent behavior criminal in certain zones all around the city is a way of dealing with abusive behavior. I just don't agree with it. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, it's David again. I called you earlier on the Huff line about the title of the show.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, David.
I just had a simple question. I was thinking about Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Uh-huh.
And I started thinking, is that like SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, just in the fact that the acronym has four letters?
Well, you know, it's really a... We had a number of acronyms in the 90s. This organization was formed, I think, in 1989, in the middle of a lot of homeless protests. We had another group called SWAP, Soup Without a Permit. We were serving free food, and they were arresting us. And there's SCAN. You've probably heard of SCAN. Maybe you haven't. Santa Cruz Action Network, which is used to be a much more powerful organization than it was. Used to elect all the people on the city council who won, the so-called progressives, who weren't too progressive on homeless issues, but...
Yeah, there's so many good four-letter organizations out there. There's the Social Movement Empowerment Project in San Francisco. I read a thing they put out a while ago called the Movement Action Plan. It was a really good resource for people in movements trying to organize and face, you know, like the anti-nuclear nuclear buildup groups in the past, things like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know, you know, there are numerous acronyms. I don't, you know, some there are some three-letter acronyms, CAB, Community Action Board, there are longer acronyms. We just have, I think I cooked up the name Huff at one point. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom it came out of a group called the Coalition to End the Sleeping Ban, I think, and there were a couple of other groups. We've been huffing and puffing for years. So.
That's great. That's all I was wondering.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, sure. Phone lines are open 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and the name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The number to call if you got information or questions that you don't want to put on the air is 423-HUFF. And that's also to report these kinds of police problems, although if I'm on the air, I encourage you to call in now at 427-3772 and talk about them on the air. We're also going to try to set up this website. We're getting closer, as I understand it. People are working on it, are working hard. And we're going to have, you know, we're going to try to make clear that every officer in town has his own special section of the website. And she or he will be given special brownie points. You know, if they are good officers, they get, you know, little smiles, and if they're bad officers, they get frowns, and if they're brutal officers, they get little blood spots, you know, that sort of thing. I'm kidding about that. But there is going to be a blog that allows people to post their experience with the police department and by name with each police officer. And you better be accurate, because police officers have been known to sue for false information. So, you know, police officers are not considered public figures. So if you're criticizing a public figure like me, for instance, or, you know, Mayor Matthews or Obama, that you have a much broader leeway. If you're criticizing a police officer or a person in private life, you don't have such broad leeway. And if you cause them injury to their reputation or their business by falsely stating things, has to be falsely stating things, then you can become liable for that. So that's something you have to remember as we proceed with the CopWatch website. You know, it has to be responsibly done. I hope people will be responsible, and I'll be giving you more information about it. If you'd like to be a part of CopWatch, either on the street, we've been doing it every Tuesday, different places, and I'm kind of doing it periodically whenever I'm downtown, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and volunteer, because we can use volunteers. Okay, getting back to the downtown doo-doo, the hors d'oeuvre announces, the hors d'oeuvre offenses that were passed by the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday night. Let's see here. Well, I keep shifting from document to document, but the actual the staff report that came out divided the ordinances this way. there are various laws, actually. They were going to call them downtown and business district improvement measures. Of course, I don't think that's the case, but that's how they were billed. It introduced ordinances that made changes. Again, the basic changes were they're going to meter the benches, as I call it. They aren't actually going to make you require to put money in a parking meter, but you can only be there for an hour on a public bench. There's no provision for increasing the number of public benches or returning the public benches that they took away in order to discourage groups of people they didn't like, where there's no public hearing on that, no public comment period, no way to discuss it, no way to, you know, find some other solution than removing public space, again, and public amenities, because you want to pander to a merchant fear or the police department's wisdom on these issues. That's what's coming up. You have an hour limit on a parking on a bench. Once you're warned, you have only an hour to be there. Similar to the move-along law, which criminalizes political tabling in one place, although there are various ways around that, which we've learned. However, luckily that hasn't been enforced much recently. And in fact, all these laws are just selectively enforced, depending on how the police feel about the situation, and all supposedly whether they've gotten a complaint. They like to say that, see, we only do something if we're so lenient, we only act if there's a complaint. Well, there's a certain kind of person who doesn't want to see homeless people downtown, doesn't like street performing, doesn't go for political tabling, and can make complaints ad nauseum if they want. We don't have any stats on the people behind the complaints because the police don't want to tell us who's complaining, even though those are public records, too. My last attempt to get public records kind of ran ashore on the reef of the police refusing to give them to me when I had a tape recorder in my hand, even though they're public officials, we're in a public place, they're supposed to be publicly accountable for what they do, and it hasn't gotten any better. Again, I'm still working on an action to go to the police department with the appropriate video equipment and, you know, make the request again in a very well-documented way, and that could well happen within the next month, once I deal with this metro situation, which I'm going to be dealing with too. Anyway, the ordinances were the bench, the one-hour bench limit, new laws that make three infractions of any kind a misdemeanor, although it's a little bit unclear as to whether they actually do that or they're simply recommending to the district attorney that that be done. Both of those things were said at the council meeting. I'm assuming that the first is the case, that they actually do that, because that seems to be what was in the staff report. But we'll have to see, and maybe Monsieur Rotkin can give us some information on that tomorrow at 10 o'clock, the Westside Coffee Roasting Company. The third thing that's done is the forbidden zones are expanded, significantly expanded for sitting and spare changing, peaceful spare changing, somewhat expanded for political tabling and street performing. Catherine Byers was able to introduce a resolution that kept the O'Neill's area, in front of O'Neill's across from the Cinema 9, a place where people could play without trying to get elaborate permits. As originally this was a removed area, now they're allowing people to continue to play there by exempting them from having to be 10 feet from a street art sculpture or 10 feet from a trash compactor. I guess there's no trash compactors there. Trash cans are not trash compactors. I at first thought they were included, but trash cans are not included as forbidden zone determinants. The other aspects to the measure were just kind of, looks like, feel-good measures, which have little really real effect, and are not. But the problem is, again, they perpetrate the illusion they're doing something without the substance, and they also mobilize people, in even though they say it's not anti-homeless, they're encouraging people to go after people who, wealthier people or more conservative people or people who are not a part of the street scene at all, who want to simply, you know, be consumers downtown or get to their jobs downtown, somehow feel that, you know, they may find certain kinds of behavior inappropriate. They will call the police on that behavior, even if it's not abusive. If you're just sitting in the wrong area, then you're a criminal. And it's not been made clear, as I said before, how many of the citations given out is actually for that kind of thing, for sitting in the wrong area. And if they say that's the crime wave, it's a crime wave that the city council itself created with downtown ordinances that make sitting in most areas criminal activity, even if you're not doing anything else. You know, or failure to move when a police officer tells you to move. Well, you say, well, you should always move when a police officer tells you to move. Well, No, you shouldn't. You have to determine whether it's a lawful order, and then you have to determine whether the law is constitutional, really. You know, is an officer, you know, part of a process that's kind of a wave of criminalization that's being used in sort of a police state manner? And you might say, oh, not in Santa Cruz. Well, you know, look at the Bush regime for the last 8 years. Look at the war we're still in, the war that Obama is expanding in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And ask yourself, you know, what's really happening here? And how unquestioning do you want to be in following the orders of authority figures? How healthy is that for your society, for your family, you know, for your friends, for yourself? I don't think it's healthy. There's also a motion to participate in a Real Change, Not Spare Change program proposed by the Downtown Association. This is like a Starve Out the Panhandlers program. They tried it. They called it Give It a Hand, Not a Handout back in 1989. They tried it again in 1995 or 96. It was kind of laughed out of town. I'm not aware that it's been successful anywhere in the country particularly. It's a way of trying to persuade people that they're being very caring by giving money to poverty pimps or social service bureaucrats who, you know, many of them are well-intended, but a lot of the money gets eaten up in middle-class jobs. We have a shelter program which shelters, what, 5%, 10% of the homeless community. And for a very small amount of money, that could go up to 50 or 60 or 70% with low-income campgrounds. But that's not how the money is spent, and that's not how the city allows it to be spent. Instead, they don't mind spending the money on enforcement activities that criminalize people instead, for doing things they have to do, like sleep at night, or be in public spaces, which they also have to do. You know, it's funny that people would think that removing people from most of the areas on Pacific Avenue and cramming them into smaller and smaller places would produce a more peaceful and congenial and diverse and weird and welcoming Santa Cruz to all kinds of people. I mean, that is just really a no-brainer for me. I can't understand how many people with a straight face actually proposed that in the heated and passionate way they did at City Council on Tuesday night. It just does not compute with me. Then there's a chronic inebriate enforcement program prohibiting sale to identified individuals by alcohol retailers. I mean, I don't like drunks. I don't drink myself. I sometimes appreciate a less inhibited bar scene. I recognize a lot of the problems occur around bars at night, probably far more than at other times during the day in other places. But you're not having a lot of regulation of bars, or, you know, police dealing with bar problems, or new regulations for, you know, new laws in front of the bar. You can't hang out in front of the Catalyst. You're not going to get that. Hell no. Even though probably a lot of the police problems are there. No, because those are commercial activities, you see. It's the non-commercial activities where people don't have the money that are going to get hassled, going to get scapegoated, going to get blamed, and it's just wrong-headed. It doesn't deal with real problems of abusive behavior downtown. As for inebriates, you know, there was a call for more alcohol programs. I'm not an expert in the effectiveness of alcohol control programs or AA. I actually received a letter criticizing the current religious aspect of AA as being a court-mandated program. You have to go to AA even if you're not a believer in Jesus, and you've got to, you know, get saved with the Jesus program. Obviously, I don't support that. I would like to see ways of dealing with alcoholism, but I'm not aware that a lot of resources are devoted to it in this community, and that certainly was not made clear at the city council meeting, and no new resources were devoted to it. Instead, more money is going to be given to the police, has to be, for enforcement activities. Although there was no estimate of how much more is going to be spent on enforcement activities. There's a motion to direct the staff to work with DA for stronger enforcement of new graffiti laws and stay-away orders for chronic offenders. You know, the gang problems stuff. I've never had one gang problem with anybody in Santa Cruz, and I've lived here 20 years. I lived in the Beach Flats for a significant number of that amount of that time, at least, I don't know, 6 months. Walked every day around. I'm a big guy, a chunky beard, you know, so, I mean, I'm not an older person who's more frail. I'm not a young child or a mother. So, I mean, I'm not going to have the same experience that those people are going to have, I admit. But, you know, it seems to me the way to deal with gang problems is to talk to the gangs. You know, not to just talk to the cops, who have an interest in dealing with issues a certain way and slanting it a certain way, however well-intended they are. If you look at the Good Times today, you'll see Sergeant Harms. You'll hear, you'll read about his beat and how he... It's an interesting chronicle on the Good Times, which I'm going to explore in more detail in my Sunday show. But police have a certain perspective, you know. They have a certain orientation. Even the nicest cops are part of a bigger organization with a bigger mandate and a bigger bias. And they also tend to defend each other, even when they're in the wrong. You know? I mean, you know, you don't want to sell out your brother officer and all that sort of thing, or your sister officer. And it results in institutionalized violence and corruption frequently, in Santa Cruz as well as elsewhere. You know, we saw that with the DIY business where there was political surveillance, and the same guy who organized and dictated the political surveillance, Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel, assigned himself to investigate the issue later. And the whole city council backed him up. Well, I should say most of the city council backed him up. The mayor backed him up. The city manager backed him up. And the only person who eventually called foul, I think Tony Madrigal was involved after there was a significant public outcry about this. He jumped in front of the parade, and good for him, you know, I'm right, fine. There's some parades it's good to jump in front of. I'm glad he did, but that's not generally what he does. He certainly didn't jump in front of the parade opposing the downtown ordinances. It would have been a small parade last night, because the big parade were the merchants' associations, I mean, Tuesday night, doing this kind of, we'll solve the problems by making it more illegal to be in more spaces, giving the police more power to give more tickets for less offenses, and we'll make more spaces, they're saying it's more open to the public, so you can only sit there for an hour. Now, you need more benches, and you also need a different way than a cop coming along and saying, move every hour. I mean, it's really a way of saying, we're not going to talk to the people who cluster around benches as human beings, we're going to deal with them as a criminal element. You know, we're going to enforce a code of behavior. Instead of saying, you know, let's bring these people into the process. And they weren't brought into the process at all. Mayor Matthews acknowledged she didn't even talk to the homeless bureaucrats at the Homeless Service Center. You know, I don't think she talked to the Community Action Board people. She mentioned talking to her buddies in the Downtown Association, the Downtown Management Corporation, the Santa Cruz Neighbors, the Chamber of Commerce, all the people who had a prefabricated agenda, but none of whom spent significant amounts of time on the street. And she talked to the cops, who spend time on the street, but in a very particular way. Another thing that was passed was a motion to direct the mayor to meet with the county sheriff to change the policy of releasing detainees and inmates into the city. Any figures about recidivism, about people who are released and cause more problems? Not that I saw. Not that I saw. Maybe I missed it. I read the report online. I couldn't get to the report because the room was so crowded. Interesting thing, in any previous city council meeting with a huge crowd like that, the fire marshal would have required a lot of people to leave so that people could move around in the room. But for Cynthia Matthews' friends, that didn't happen. Matthews, in a number of ways, acted in a discriminatory and partisan fashion at this meeting. She did allow me 5 minutes to speak, as a member of HUF, as well as two other organizations who were supportive of the organization, the Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Association got their time to speak. So, you know, that was nice. I mean, that was, should we say, standard. That's what she's supposed to do. But she also did things like she allowed certain members of the community, not a lot of them, one or two of them, to speak beyond their time, and she cut off other opposition speakers. I got to say, she generally... The two-minute limit, which was not enough, was generally enforced. But it really didn't matter how much communications time she allowed. Because all these matters have been cooked up beforehand without any meaningful input from poor homeless people or people on the streets or gangs or inebriates or whatever groups, you know, are actually involved, then you don't really get something that is a meaningful solution that involves all the people involved. I mean, it doesn't happen. Instead, you're imposing something that looks good to a bunch of Clint Eastwood types who somehow think that if they just sort of, you know, root and toot and shoot and come to town, that's going to resolve things. Well, When you do that, you prompt people on the other side to say, okay, let's boycott the fucking town, you know? Let's start marching up and down and give the tourists tickets for sitting in the wrong place. Call the police on citizen arrests. Make citizen arrests of people for doing all these criminal behaviors. Start demanding that people who walk their dogs or middle-class tourists get tickets. Start videotaping police refusing to give tickets and then start gathering evidence that there's a pattern of selective enforcement. Of course, we really need to do this anyways, because without these new ordinance changes, you have an oppressive situation downtown that I've been documenting for months about how police are cracking down on people who have no places to go. You know, as I said at the meeting, people are driven out of the parks, away from the beaches, out of the Poganip, you know, out of the parking lots where it's illegal to congregate. And then there's the claim that there are too many groups downtown. They're blocking our sidewalks. You know, well, chickens coming home to roost, folks, and then getting blamed for roosting. And they're going to have roast chicken tonight, I guess. I don't know about the issue about how to deal with people being released from jail, whether they should be taken to their community of origin. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's, but I mean, without any evidence that there's a specific problem there in terms of that a large number of the crimes come from people released from jail and that there are real crimes, not these bogus forbidden zone crimes or spitting on the sidewalk crimes or bouncing a ball downtown crimes or, you know, playing music that offends a resident two blocks away during the daytime hours crimes. You know, I don't have much confidence here. I don't see any stats. I don't see any figures. And I actually asked Mayor Matthews to share with us this file that you heard the caller talk about, of all the complaints she's gotten in the last year or two. And I wrote her the following letter. If I can find the darn thing. Let's see if it's around here. Let's take a look. Here it is. I think I posted this letter on Indie Bay for those who want to read it. Dear Cynthia, and I phoned her yesterday, and I asked for records, and I was told, well, I'll read you the letter. Per my phone call of a few minutes ago, at the Tuesday, January 27th council meeting, you held up a file of correspondence you received from the public regarding downtown problems that you used to justify the downtown ordinance package you introduced and passed. I was told by staff worker Anna Brooks today that this correspondence was not in the agenda packet and only available through public view through you. This, according to advice from the city clerk. I left you a message requesting to see copies of this packet of correspondence, which was clearly directly relevant in your formation of the downtown ordinance package. Since the concerns were addressed to you as mayor and or council member, these documents are public record. Though Anna called them private, I don't think that's accurate, particularly after you held them up at the city council as instrumental in forming your opinion and directly relevant to the council debate you had that night. Please make available for public view the entire packet you held up at city council, as well as any other documents addressed to you as mayor or city council member on the subject of downtown problems concerning the public behaviors at issue on the evening agenda item. I am seeking to view all other emails and correspondence you have on agenda item 29, downtown and business district improvement measures. This should include the minutes of any meetings and any correspondence on the subject, whether with the Downtown Management Corporation, the Downtown Association, its Legislative and Social Committee, the Santa Cruz Neighbors, the Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown Task Force, or whatever the committee is that meets regularly out of public view with Council Members Coonerty and Robinson on this subject, or any other groups you've had communications with. Please make available as much of this correspondence as soon as you can. I'm assuming you intend to push through this measure at the next council meeting. It will be helpful for those of us who you previously kept in the dark to have all the information we can, particularly that you selectively shared with other groups. This should include all prior drafts of these proposed laws, as well as minutes, emails, and any other documents, whether written, visual, or audio, that relate to this subject. I remind you that I requested information on these ordinances more than a week before the council meeting, and you did not respond. The city attorney likewise refused to provide information, though he was obviously intimately involved with this process. Had you and other city council members engaged in a more open process originally, this request would probably not be necessary. Thanks, Robert Norris. P.S. I want to see a copy of monthly camping incident homeless shelter attendance reports, January 1st, 2008 through the present. Please let me know, and they'll be available for viewing as well. I haven't received a response yet, but I only sent this email yesterday, so, you know, 10 days is the time that they theoretically have to respond, but I've already sent a 10-day response requesting to know what's going on with the Metro Police. Now they're arresting people for chatting on their property and demanding they leave, as they did me, and I've gotten no response from them except to say we're working on it, and that was a month and a half ago. So it's hard to get information out of people whose real responsibility is to provide it, unless you have well-organized public feelings behind you. And I got to admit, I'm often a lone voice on this. If you want to be a voice that backs me up, well, call the Huff Line volunteer, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Human Rights Organization is also a group that's considering working on counter-protests to deal with the Downtown Association's determination that the sidewalks are no place for poor homeless people and the street community. And we're going to be meeting at 2 o'clock on Saturday at Taqueria Vallarta. So come on down. There's a caller. Hello, you are on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is John Tilkin.
Hey, John. Calling from San Jose, are you?
Yeah.
What's happening over there?
Oh, not too much. I was wondering, have you considered the process by which you can repeal this law? If I think you have like 30 or 60 days or something like that to gather signatures to put it on the ballot.
Yeah, that is a process. The problem with that is, I mean, it's actually it's called a referendum, and you can do it after, you know, you get 30 days actually for signatures, although I'm not sure. You have to get essentially about 6,000 registered voters to sign up. It really requires a well-oiled machine, and it's not really a likely solution, particularly since it's not the expansion of these ordinances that's really horrible. It's the existence of these ordinances that's the problem. And what you want to do there is you want to pass an initiative, which is another process citizens can use. Again, you got a longer period of time for that. I think it's 6 months. But it requires money. It requires organization. And it requires the ability to do a lot of publicity on the issue, too, which I'm not sure that... Well, I know I personally don't have the energy to do a one-man campaign, but if somebody were doing a campaign like that, I would certainly be supportive of it.
Yeah, okay, well, something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah. Any other reports from San Jose that you wish to make?
No, things are looking better over here, a little bit better now.
No, really? Less police violence?
Well, no, just for me personally.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I know you were... You're suffering economic problems. I know. I've heard about that.
Yeah.
I wish you well, and keep listening. Call in again if you got some other thoughts.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks, John. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're tuned to 101.1 FM Freak Radio. I'm talking about the downtown ordinances, laws that in effect criminalize poor people on a lot of the spaces on downtown and actually in every business district, that make it much more restrictive for political tablers and street performers. You know, let's put it this way. It continues and intensifies existing restrictions, and essentially it mobilizes a kind of mob mentality of merchants and conservative residents who feel somehow empowered to scapegoat people downtown whose appearance they don't like. You know, that is my gut feeling. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people are going to be much more careful about this. They're only going to say, well, it's only if I find a person's behavior abusive that I'm going to try to get the policeman to move that guy along. But I got a feeling that that's not what's likely to happen in the wake of these ordinances. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, the last... this whole package didn't really create anything new, except the final thing is the 7-point program. The laws were in the first point, and then the other five things had to do with real change, not spare change, inebriate enforcement program. DA is going to use stay-away orders against graffiti people. County sheriff's going to try to get inmates released elsewhere than downtown. A motion to explore increased law enforcement presence through non-general fund revenue sources. I hope they're not talking about merchants funding private security squads operating under color of law as police officers, although that's what we really have with the Santa Cruz Police Force downtown right now in a lot of cases. But that would be, I mean, that's straight fascism. I mean, that's actually kind of the definition of corporate fascism, is that you have the merchants essentially controlling the public police force and, you know, using it as their own corporate kind of control. Finally, there's a motion to launch a downtown visitor restroom program. That's fine. Although I understand one of the restrooms is going to be in the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where a number of us are not allowed to go because of our political views and actions. That's not fine, and that will be challenged. I'd like to see more restrooms opened up. I think that we've been asking for that for years. Sure, keep it up. More restrooms. You actually probably need public restrooms, not just restrooms in businesses. But because I tried it in Santa Barbara, and I don't think it lasted very long. It was going when I was working down there as a worker for the Legal Defense Center in Santa Barbara in 1992. They had this restroom program for businesses, including the Earthling Bookstore had this. But it kind of fell by the wayside. They finally opened up real public restrooms. But I'm not sure that they're in, and they also have restrooms attached to the parking garages, as we do, that are open during daytime hours. We don't have 24-hour restrooms, though, and those are what's needed, even though it is a public expense. I'm going to play a little tape from the streets so that we can actually hear some other things than my fine perspective on what's happening. But callers do come first. Let's see what this caller has to say. Caller, are you... caller stopped calling. Okay, caller, if you want to get back and you want to be on the air, you should call, because we only have about 20 minutes left in the show, and I got to go. So call in. I'll be around tomorrow at 10, talking with Councilmember Rotkin at the Westside Coffee Roasting Company. And then I may or may not be at the Human Rights Organization meeting, but I encourage folks to show up there. It happens 2 o'clock at the Taqueria Vallarta downtown, Cathcart and Pacific, where there's going to be discussion of a boycott bigotry campaign, I believe, or at least some kind of downtown protests. And I'll also be coming back on Sunday for a longer show. I'll be able to play actually some the city council discussion and debate. Probably will be replayed on community TV. I'm not sure where and when. But it was an interesting discussion in many ways. When the community turns out, to me, it's almost always a positive thing, though in this case it wasn't positive in terms of what they were supporting. But I think it's important people speak up, and they start mixing with each other and mingling and debating. I don't know how much of that happened because I was crammed inside at the time during Tuesday, but I kind of hope that happens. Anyway, here's a little from about a week ago, the Copwatch table, and I believe we're at that point. These are some street interviews. I hope some of them will be self-explanatory, and I hope you enjoy them. And if you have any calls, please do call in, 427-3772.
We have a person here on the street with a sign, need help with supplies for cold and rainy weather, with a small cap and a modest amount of money in it, maybe $5 or $10. How's it been going?
It's been doing pretty good, pretty good.
And your name is?
Tina.
Tina, any hassles from police, hosts, or other authorities?
Not lately, no. No, they've been pretty decent lately.
And are you outside?
I'm staying at a friend's house right now, hoping not to have to go outside yet.
I see you have your kitty with you.
Yes, I do.
The name of your kitty is?
Scuzzy.
And how is Scuzzy doing?
Very well. Very well.
It's actually about 4:15, and we're in front of the Neary Business Center. A lot of people on the street. How are they donating? Are they giving you some, even as we speak, a dollar donation? How long have you been here?
I've been here for about an hour and a half.
And you're getting a little chilly, I notice.
Oh, no, not really. Just a little, maybe. Just an itsy bit.
The shade is now falling on this side of Pacific Avenue.
Yep.
Now, you said you didn't have much to say, but I insisted on whipping out my tape recorder anyway. Any final words?
No. It's just a really good day today. Making good money.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Mm.
So we're here on the corner of Pacific and Cathcart about 3 o'clock on the 18th of January, 2009, 2 days before our stout warrior Obama comes and leads us to Afghanistan. And we're talking with...
Dreamcatcher.
And of his caretaker...
I'm not his caretaker.
Certainly not. What's your name?
Black Rose.
You are the Black Rose. And now you say that there was an... You're not much for throwing up, but occasionally you throw up in concert with other people.
Yes, I orchestrated a good one the other night, as a matter of fact.
Tell us about this, and try to make it as graphic as possible so we can all join in your experience.
Well, okay. Now, maybe once every in a blue moon I have stomach problems, and the other night I was retching for at least 24 hours just every time I got up from a horizontal position.
Is this at the thought of Mayor Matthews? Probably not.
Well, maybe someone did think of Mayor Matthews, and I was throwing up, right on time.
She had that kind of purgative function.
That could have been happening, you see, but that's not where my mind was at because my eyeballs were sweating.
Sweaty eyeballs?
Yes.
Now, were you around when this happened?
I was watching him deteriorate on the lawn of City Hall, yes.
But you weren't there. This actually began in the loft, the Paul Lee.
3 o'clock, 3 a.m. in the morning, all of us started retching.
And how many retchers were there?
There was three in the loft, and then we heard about two others outside the loft
and
program.
And it's because of some bad methadrine you took?
I wasn't having a bad dream. Is that what you said?
No, actually, that wasn't what I said. Let me say, rather, what do you think prompted this eruption of ooga booga?
I think it was something in common that we ate, because it was either at the soup kitchen or the meal that we were having that night at the center, at the shelter.
But only the...
I ate that food, and I didn't get sick.
Okay,
so.
Right. But
they served a pan at the end, because they had more people than anticipated.
And you went in for the last pan?
Right. The last pan, and I had a feeling, because I took a couple bites.
Meat dish?
Yes, it was meat from the day before that was fresh. And they had a pan
fresh
left.
One day, rotten the next.
I agree. I think that's
your stomach disagreed.
I was retching the foulest, sourest tasting, burning vial. Oh my God! I filled the drain over there across next door to the shelter when I had to get up from laying in front of it when I just fell out.
Did you have a fever or just red?
I had everything: the fever, the chills, the shakes. I couldn't. I was warm.
What about
cold and sweaty?
What about your poo-poo?
It hasn't hit bottom yet. That'll be tonight, I think.
Oh, does this actually happen recently, or?
It's happening right now. Excuse me.
Oh. For God's sake! I don't know what to say.
You know, some people come up.
Hey, then.
We don't want your kind around here either. All these people just hanging out. I don't know what to say.
Hey, I appreciate you playing my little quips on the metaphysics psychogasm thing. Some people come up and said, hey, Dreamcatcher, that's cool.
Well, along with the rest of your reports.
Wow, we have a lot more listeners than we know.
Right. And, I try to keep it real. And this little practice that you give me here right now, at the moment even, it helps me define that even better. And I appreciate that opportunity.
You communicate the fine cuisine that you occasionally pick up at the homeless shelter.
Well, I got to be honest about that, because I hate throwing up. And my eyeballs get sweaty. This is what happens. Then my mouth gets a rush of saliva, and I'm trying to hold it in.
You're beginning to make me sick.
I'm trying to hold it in, and I'm trying to come down the stairs, and I'm throwing up in my hand, and it's spilling out all over, and I'm leaving this. And then I fill the trash can, because then I don't make it even to the door, after, five or six times.
How do you deal with your clothing? I mean, do you have clean clothing?
I'm still wearing the same clothes. I might as well wait till it's all over with before I change or take a shower or something. Here, give me a big hug.
All right, well, thank you very much, Dreamcatcher.
You're welcome.
Black Rose. And it's about 15 to 10 on January 18th, 2009, downtown on Pacific Avenue, wandering by the Del Mar Theater. And the mariachis are out in full horn. And there's even a few people in front of the Del Mar. And what's happening?
Evening.
What's happening? Anything exciting?
I've been working and getting myself a lawyer.
You are, of course, the notorious Irish.
Yes.
We talked about you on the radio today.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Well, we played the Friday before last accounts of your associates after you were taken to jail.
And
they came
over here and they gave an account of what happened to you. So.
Yeah, but you know, they may have a little bit of truth in what they say, but I believe they're just full of lies and bullshit.
Well, I'm talking about not about the police. I'm talking about the people who witnessed your arrest.
Oh, the witness just they. Now my homeboy Brian here, he ran up there, had 5 tasers pulled on him, and says, "I want to talk to a sergeant right now."
I remember. We actually we interviewed him, and we interviewed you, as you may remember.
Yes.
Remember on the cop watch table? We're doing a cop watch tomorrow night, on Tuesday night. I'm sorry, Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock?
Front of Borders, yeah.
I'll probably drop by and see what's up. If I have anything new,
your face looks like it's healed somewhat.
For the most part, as you can see, I picked a bit of the scabs. I have a habit from my childhood.
Don't pick at your scabs.
Yeah, but
they'll only get infected.
Yeah, I try not to. It's
all
a
right.
Childhood habit. You know, the bad habits die hard.
Anything happened today or yesterday you want to report on or anything?
No, I haven't really been messed with by the police. I mean, they try to catch us drinking wherever. We're doing, you know, they say, oh, you Spains and all that, but we put money back into the local economy. Yeah, we Spains it off the citizens, but we're putting it right back into your businesses. So we are, in a sense, they say you don't do anything, but we do. When we buy our beer and we buy our cigarettes and we buy our food,
you're a contributing part of the economy.
We are part of the economy, and that's something
thank
that's
you,
overlooked, because no worries, it's overlooked in the fact because we're doing something that's different. We're going against the grain. And
I hear you.
Notice here that the area in front of New Leaf Market usually closed at 10 o'clock in the fenced off area with a no trespassing sign. Both no trespassing signs are in fact still chained to the gate instead of blocking the entranceway. It says no trespassing 6 p.m. through 9 a.m. Is that what it says? That's what it says. But the chains usually up blocking the walkway are not up tonight. So that seems to be an unusual situation for the downtown area at this time of night. Of course, it is Sunday night. Maybe there's some sort of a Martin Luther King's mother's birthing day is tomorrow. So maybe that's in honor of that, perhaps. Who knows?
And nary a police officer in sight. Horns sound a little off key, but maybe just my ears are tired tonight. All right, I'm down here at the cop watch table. It's about 1:20. I'm talking to a woman who has confessed to criminal behavior in the parking lot. What's your name, criminal?
Carol.
Carol, you're signing these two petitions, the one to fire and prosecute, or at least one of them, the one to restore the right to public assembly in parking public parking lots, and the other encouraging the DA to prosecute and fire, to prosecute bad cops. I guess it would be the city would fire them. But you said that you actually napped in your vehicle. Aren't you aware of the law?
I was out like a light.
Well, now look, you know, why don't you just get yourself a house? Come on.
It's too far away.
You know, I've heard plenty of excuses in my time, but that one takes the cake. It's too far away. You know, our economy is crippled because people like you just don't have the wherewithal to drive here and drive there. Think of the boost that would give the gas industry.
Or go get a job.
Yeah.
And get yourself a place. What is this?
Exactly. But you already have done that, at least.
Right.
But
yeah.
The problem is you're not using your place. Instead, you're soiling the car and your public streets by sleeping in your vehicle.
Yeah, I understand.
Now, was this in a parking lot or was this a...
It was in the Front Street parking garage.
That's illegal behavior, I'm afraid, because unless you are parking or retrieving your vehicle, and I don't think sleeping constitutes parking or retrieving.
I had no intention to retrieve it or park it. It was already parked, and I ain't retrieving it until I go home from work.
Well, my suggestion is that you, in order for your own good of your own soul, you turn, and also a little hefty fine as well to help the city coffers, you can
really
turn yourself into Ryan Coonerty, our former mayor.
Yes. I don't get him. I mean, I guess I do.
But he's going to get you.
No doubt. That's amazing. My granddaughter, she's 14. She's living with me now. She comes down here and, you know, hangs out with a bunch of kids. They're all, you know, 14, 15, 16, like that. And she said there was about a group of about 15 of them. that I don't know when it was, this last weekend or the weekend before, the cops stopped him 3 times, harassed him, and one of the times they searched him all. You might be gangs. You might be doing something violent.
Exactly. They're just trying to make sure that your youngsters don't take after you with your sleep crime behavior.
Really?
You know, I mean, it's all a matter of proportion. You shrink your sense of civil liberties down to the proper proportions and you'll feel better.
Right. Oh, but definitely.
Ah, there you go. So anyway, I'll give you, there's also a meeting of the next city council meeting. There's going to be a new laws that will help your daughter meet more policemen downtown, kind of a dating service for young people and police officers.
God.
And you might take one for her if you want her to, if she wants to be involved in any of our stuff. She can come to one of the meetings.
She's 14. She's into being beautiful right now. To get her brain out of it.
We'll get her drunk at that meeting. So, yes, I hear you. Again, we've been talking with?
Carol.
Thanks, Carol. So, again, it's the Cop Watch table on the 20th of January, 2009. And I'm observing our friendly Sergeant Harms having a chat with a local person. Has Sergeant Harms given you any directives or suggestions or simply made friendly contact?
I appreciate Blue, all right?
Yeah.
Don't take, I've been beat up by the cops, man, and all that crap.
Right.
I've been written up for false charges.
Right.
They'll still put their life on the line for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know
sometimes
I know
they'll put someone else's life on the line for them.
I came down from Berkeley, man.
Right. Okay, well, that's good. So my question to you was, were you told to move along by the sergeant? And if that was the only thing I wondered, that's all.
Hello?
I really can't recollect, to be honest with you, exactly what he said to me.
I got you. So there was.
I was asking him a question. I said, what's the ocean? He said, within walking distance.
Cool. Well, then that's helpful information, because that's what the police should do, is ask information.
Go for your grandma. It's not all that bad.
Hey, any hassles by police so far, guys?
No.
Good? Good. This guy needs... And this, you're talking about this guy. Ho, panhandling in a group. You're under arrest. No, just kidding. Your name is...
Josh.
Thank you, Josh. Good luck. We're at the corner of Soquel and Pacific. And as we can see, police are being very friendly, and at least the sergeant is, so that's nice. Talking with Sergeant Harms here, who's spending a little of his valuable time talking to us here at the Cop Watch table. He's Huff Watch, we're Cop Watch. And it's about 15 to 2. And about a week and a half ago, Irish was, according to his own report and those of 4 or 5 of his companions, slammed down for not pulling his hands out of his pockets sufficiently quickly as he approached several officers on the levee after they had harassed a number of people without shelter who were sleeping outside demanding they get up and so forth. And then when officers tried to approach it because they observed him being roughed up on the ground after being slammed down, they were threatened with tasers, each of them, and told to stay at a distance, which they could not really carefully observe what was happening. Is that an inaccurate report, Sergeant?
I heard something. Well, no, that's not what I heard.
Well, perhaps you can correct the report.
There's a little bit more. But again, if a complaint's going to be generated, I can't really speak on it anyway. I could give you, you know, much like you like to do, hypothetical situations. We could talk about that all day.
I'm looking about real police abuse, the truth, as one man said to me about 10 minutes ago, not just speculation. And that's why I go around reporting actual accounts.
One of the things, like saying that the police slammed someone to the ground, that may be the truth, but if you fail to address what led up to that, such as resisting arrest or, you know, a safety issue that we're all trained to address, then you're only reporting half the story.
Well, as I said, the report was, and again, I saw Irish's face afterward, and it was significantly injured, and
evidence of something coming into contact with his face.
Indeed. He probably assaulted the ground with his face. I know it rarely happens, but
he could have assaulted a police officer, and in defense of their own safety, you know, something could have happened.
But if that happened, I think he would have been charged with assaulting a police officer. That doesn't happen. Instead, we have the catch-all, and easy to prove, and easy to get a plea on, resisting arrest charge.
Correct. Because we don't have to put ourselves in harm's way.
I'm in harm's way whether I like it or not.
Exactly.
Sergeant Harm's
really
way.
Keep you.
The problem is it's more a discrimination.
So, you're not denying that.
Given a lawful order, you've got an obligation to follow that order. And if you choose not to, it can be taken as an act of aggression. I think, you know, anyone would understand that.
Well, the question is, is it an act of aggression or is it an act of noncompliance? Those are two different things.
When you're dealing with a person who's known to be violent, yes, it is.
I don't believe any officer was assaulted in this situation prior to his being slammed to the ground. At least, unless you have...
I wasn't there. I can't speak to it.
But you don't have any information that he was, apparently. Or at least you're not giving it at the moment.
No, what he told me was the officers asked him to remove his hands, and he told them no, and then he was very forceful and volatile in his...
And then he did remove his hands.
I don't know if he ever removed
his
hands.
He told me.
He didn't tell me he ever removed his hands.
This idea that, you know, your hands have to be removed...
I'm not going to put myself in a position where somebody...
What are you doing in the first place that would make people antagonistic toward you, waking them up from asleep on the levee, enforcing the... That's a nice way of covering yourself, isn't it, Sergeant?
Covering myself, that's
enforcing bad laws is not a good way for Santa Cruz police officers to behave, I don't think.
Well, then the people should have those laws addressed.
No, the police officers should use their discretion in an appropriate way and not go seeking out harassment of people who are sleeping at night and have no place to go.
You know, I could view it as not harassment. Perhaps it was just going up there and advising people that that's not the proper place to be sleeping.
Or without preventing any options, of course.
Natural habitat. Once again, that's
witness to the incident. We're talking about the Irish incident. You were actually a witness to that, were you not?
Yes, I was.
And Sergeant Harms here wasn't a witness. You weren't a witness, right?
I was not a witness.
But he has heard the police accounts. Has said that
I have not heard police accounts. I've only heard
Irish's account. But he speculates that Irish was resisting arrest, was perhaps approaching in a violent or aggressive manner. That's your word.
Irish had just barely woken up. It was still really cold out. He was taking his time, taking his hands out of his sweatshirt. That was it. And before
he actually refused to take his hands out, and he voiced
that
concern.
He refused it first.
Not just not taking his hands out, but told them he was not going to take his hands out.
And that it was cold.
There's a difference. What's the truth? You got to seek the truth.
The truth is apparently that it was a cold morning and he didn't want to take his hands out of his sweatshirt. So what happened? What happened next? According to this eyewitness,
that was when two officers came up behind him, got him behind the knee, and dropped him to the ground.
Now, did they drop him gently to the ground?
No.
Why do you say that?
Just the force of it and Irish's face afterwards.
Describe Irish's face afterwards.
Irish actually told me that he pulled away when the officers tried to remove his hands from his pocket. That he pulled. That would be active resistance.
Perhaps punishable by slamming someone's face into the ground, eh?
I
don't think that's ever...
The cuts, lacerations, couple of bruises.
So apparently you and others were alarmed enough to kind of try to get closer to see what was happening?
A few of us kept our distance just because we don't want to have to deal with it if we don't have to.
Always safest. Be good witnesses. If the police do something wrong, you've got the best vantage point to address those issues.
But, yeah, we just moved to a point where we could actually still see everything, but not become directly involved if we didn't have to.
But some people did get closer?
Yeah.
And were they menacing the officers?
No. They were asking why. That was it.
What was the officer's response? How many of them were there, first of all?
There was about six officers.
And how many people approached asking for more information about why this man was slammed to the ground, lacerating his face?
Two.
Two people? Only two people? Two people?
Three lacerations.
Oh, thank you. Abrasions. And so what happened then?
I didn't actually hear any of the conversation, but apparently Brian let me know that he was informed that if he ever interfered again, he'd be tased.
Now, were tasers displayed by these police officers?
I didn't notice. I wasn't close enough for that.
Would you have seen it if they were displayed? I mean,
I would have seen it if they were displayed.
So you're suggesting that perhaps tasers were not displayed?
I'm suggesting that I just was not close enough to see it.
Okay. We're talking about an incident that happened a week before Friday. Friday a week ago, on the riverbank near the Soquel Bridge on the other side of the river, right?
Yes.
And we've been talking with?
Void.
Thank you, Void. And also with?
Charles.
I'm sorry. Your name again is?
You know my name.
But the people out there don't.
Sure they do.
What's your name?
My name is Mike. Harms is written right on my shirt.
He is Sergeant Harms, Badge 120, in fact. But I wanted him to say so that we would be no doubt as to the accuracy of the statement. Thank you, Boyd. Thank you, Sergeant Harms. Any final comments before we move on here? Or any questions from anybody else? Thank you both.
Go ahead.
So Sergeant Harms actually was a social worker before he was a police officer. Isn't that true, Sergeant?
Yes.
And you gave it up, as you told me, because you felt frustrated that you really couldn't do enough in that profession?
Yeah, because one of the kids I was caring for was murdered by his 18-year-old, I don't know, caretaker.
What happened in that case? Was it for gain? Was it for passion? Was it out of negligence?
Frustration, poor parenting skills, and ability to actually deal with children.
What happened? And this was in another city, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. But the sergeant is now moved from social work to police work, and we're talking with...
What are we talking about?
Well, we
don't know.
We're talking about a variety of things, mostly about policemen and police officers in Santa Cruz, and frankly, abusive police officers. And Sergeant Harms is, sometimes he measures up to that title, other times we can't really call him that abusive. So it's a problem for us cop watchers.
I don't think you can ever call me abusive.
I have called you abusive,
I believe. That's inaccurate. I really don't.
Well, you are enforcing abusive laws, and when you choose to do that, I feel you're being abusive. So,
I'm not physically abusive.
No, I'm talking about psychological, about abusive, violating people's rights, humiliating them, making them less than human beings because of the innocent behavior they're doing that the merchant class has chosen to criminalize.
How is what we're dealing with innocent behavior when a lot of times we're facing such hostility and antisocial behavior?
Well, I'm talking about people sitting on the corner, which you're actually quite polite to, and they appreciated your most recent conversation. But there are sometimes when...
Because they went along with the social order.
I think you've got it right there. The question is the social order a just social order, and does it provide room for people who, for example, have no place to sleep at night?
Well, refusing and causing a violent reaction with the police on the street is not the proper venue to deal with your frustration with the law.
There's no law against sleeping outside. And Jesus slept outside. Why can't human beings sleep outside?
Human beings can't sleep outside. They just have to be in the proper places.
Like where? There is no legal place in Santa Cruz to sleep outside.
There are campgrounds or places set aside for
that. You gotta pay the people at the campground. You gotta pay the people at the campground.
I don't know.
Former social worker Harms, what do you say to that one?
I don't have anything to say.
A little speechless, but he's still a police officer.
Answers that I just not.
He was a social worker before.
That's what he tells me, and I believe him.
She has no idea who I am, but she's already made prejudgment as to who I am, just based on her facial expressions and how she's looking at me.
She's judging you by what you're saying and by the uniform you're wearing.
By my uniform and nothing more.
Well, your comments as well. I mean, I think you have certain opinions which are not popular among this group of people, you know. So.
That's possible.
And therefore, I think it's commendable that you're willing to talk about it. Well, won't someone say right-wing rather than right?
I'm actually tolerant, whereas most of the people you're talking are intolerant.
Well, you live indoors, have a nice place to sleep, also have a secret hiding place. You won't even tell us whether you live in Santa Cruz or not.
It's because I worked very hard.
Because you worked very hard. What the hell does that have to do with it, Sergeant?
I was able to afford the place that I live in.
You worked really hard to survive.
I used to believe you. And somebody should go. If there are no jobs in the places there are, that's the first thing I would do is I would leave this community and I would go where the work was. That's just me personally, because I have respect for myself.
Well, that's what they used to say to the Okies when they came to California in the 30s. Don't come here. We don't want you. We have no jobs.
There aren't any jobs, and it just becomes kind of futile.
Well, that's, of course, the comment of every city government that wants to get rid of homeless people, is they're claiming that...
I worked in city government before.
Well, you probably read the papers. And
I did all kinds of jobs.
You talked to merchants. In fact, Sergeant Harms, there's a new set of ordinances coming up that I understand you had some input into. What's that about?
I don't really have any...
And we'll have to hear more about Sergeant Harms and what input he did or didn't have into the downtown ordinances when we return on Sunday. I have seized 7 minutes of the Cream to the Dreg show, but that is going to be quickly rectified by Uncle Dennis, who's here with the Kilt Lifter Ale, which I frankly have never tasted and probably never will. So I'm going to talk to you again on Sunday, see you then, or hear you then, perhaps, 9:30 in the morning. Call 423-HUFF in the between time in case you've got stuff you want to talk about. Thanks.
need you on my side. And the money falls away. You're coming running back, baby. Believe what I say. Money can't save your soul.
Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, inviting you to spend the next 3 hours listening to From the Cream to the Dregs here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also at www.freakradio.org. And can I say, it's kind of chilly and cool outside, so get inside, fire up the hookah, and stay warm.
I see.